Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and I am so happy on the political left to have Representative Brian King. Welcome to the studio, Brian.
Thank you, Natalie.
I should mention sitting in for Senator Jim DeBacchus,
who's on some extended
Cadillac liberal vacation.
Of course he is, and we don't need him.
I think he went back to Cuba because they weren't exercising communism well enough.
Here.
He wanted to get down there and really teach him how to do it.
And on the political right, you're hearing from him, Representative Dan McKay. Welcome back, Dan.
Hey, good morning, Natalie.
Guys, I want to ask you first. I know we just free flow on this show, but I went to the Real Salt Lake soccer match Saturday night, and I saw these signs going up in front of the rowdy sections, and it was like, this is a bar, this is a restaurant.
Oh,
I'm like,
yeah.
What is this at a soccer match? But they were starting the protests about this new law that's taken effect about the bar and restaurant signage.
More goofiness.
I don't get it, guys.
No. I voted for the bill. I'm proud we did. But this is something that happens in a 45-day session when you're dealing with literally 500 bills that you pass. Is that there are a lot of details. There's a lot of granular stuff in there that you really don't know about at the time you're debating it and you're talking about it. You knew and you let this go through, Dan.
Why are we doing this, Dan?
It's a compromise with all of the stakeholders, right? The LDS Church was involved. Alcohol purveyors were involved.
Sure.
All of those groups. But if you look, okay, everybody's cursing and saying, oh, how can you put this sign up? It's like, guys, you didn't love the Zion Curtain, so we're trying to bring things closer to something you can live with.
Mm-hmm.
And the church came a long way on this, on a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And the simplification of the licensing process, all that's good for the purveyors. So they got a lot of what they wanted. And now the public doesn't love a sign that says restaurant versus a bar. Of all the petty things to be locked up in.
It's a small
that's
thing.
Dumb.
I agree. It's a small thing.
That's why
this
we should get rid of
it. This is a move in the right direction.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not doing anything.
Every piece of a bill, if you look at one piece all by itself in its own little microcosm, it makes no sense. But when you take it as the whole suite, you get what it is. And now next year, Brian has a bill to run to get rid of the signs.
If we didn't do these things, he has no bills. Because it's just sort of like, you know, what I'm interested in is I want to stop drunk driving.
And underage drinking. And excessive use.
And excessive use. And I just don't think a sign bar or restaurant, you have to be, I just can't imagine that's a data-driven decision.
Well, sure. We were saying the same thing about Zion's Wall, the Zion Curtain, weren't we? And we were right about that. I don't think that anybody ever produced anything to suggest that the Zion Wall had anything to do with those three legitimate things that you just identified, Natalie. And that's my concern about it is we ought to be focused on whatever we pass up there on legitimate policy aims. And that's what we're trying to do.
Okay, more local news. Let's talk for a minute about Secretary Zinke's visit. Did you get to meet with him, Dan?
No.
Brian,
no. I got to meet with him.
Okay.
Sunday night. It was great.
Well, tell us about it.
This was a meeting in the board of in the Hall of Governors up at the Capitol. He was there with about 80 people. The governor was
there.
Do
you like the guy?
I was impressed with him.
Mm-hmm. Was he in a suit or was he dressed like
he was dressed in a pair of jeans. And he had a blazer on and a button-down shirt. But here's what I was impressed with. I thought that he came across and said, look, this is multiple use stuff that we're talking about. We're going to listen. We're going to try and accommodate as many interests as we can. I come here not having made up my mind. I'm going to try and get as many viewpoints as I can. And, you know, we'll make a decision. But I think that he is a big public access guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's I think that people who think he's going to just go down the Ken Ivory, Mike Noel, we're going to transfer lands back from the federal government to the state are dreaming. That's not going to happen.
Dan, I want to just share a D.C. story just because I think it's interesting. But as a Utahn, you can be in so many places in D.C. and feel completely irrelevant. But when you go over to the interior, you know, offices, all of a sudden you're like, you're the big kid on the block because, you know, we're like Nevada, Utah, Alaska. We own that place.
Yeah, which is, did you know we had two secretaries
from the visited?
Cabinet. Yeah, we have both of them in the state today.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So we have Zinke
Betsy
in the
DeVos.
State and we have Betsy DeVos.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
For people listening, that's yesterday.
That's right.
Hey, but
I mean, yesterday.
Okay, guys, but let's do the one kind of news flash from Zinke's visit, and this is Senator Hatch and what he said. It seemed like this is going to have a little bit of a life here. I'm going to quote him here, you know, speaking about Native people and how they may have been manipulated by this. He said, quote, the Indians – They don't fully understand that a lot of the things that they currently take for granted on those lands, they won't be able to do if it's made clearly into a monument or a wilderness.
Yeah, there are three problems here. One is his use of the word Indians, which is clearly outdated, obsolete reference to Native Americans.
I mean, there's a lot of other more, you know, discriminatory things he could have used.
Well, I know. But the second thing is the condescension. But
he's trying to defend him on everything.
I think in some ways the worst thing about it is he's completely inaccurate on the merits of the statement. He's just wrong.
Yeah. Dan, do you see why this is going to have a little bit of a news life? I mean,
yeah.
I think the senator was inartful.
But no question inartful.
Okay.
No question. However,
he's wrong.
What he said.
He's wrong.
Take out the use of the defamatory statement that's no longer preferred as Indians. But when you're 80-something years old, I guess it's possible to get your terms mixed up from long ago.
Yeah.
That being said, I think that people do not fully understand that when the federal government controls who goes on, who goes off, when they go on, when they go off, permits for these kinds of things, those types of activities change based on administration. And because of that, they can lose access to sacred ground that they currently use for purposes that they may not have future access to because some federal bureaucrat back in D.C. has made that change.
Yeah.
So
not what he's saying, Dan.
Is he wrong?
He is wrong. He's saying,
in the way he said it.
He's saying they won't be able to do it if it's made clearly into a monument or wilderness. That's not true. They can do all those things that they care about, that they've expressed as important to them. And that's what the Obama Declaration did.
And that's why they supported it, because it's protected.
That's
right.
And so if
you're right. Once a federal area is set up as a federal area, the rules never change. You're absolutely right, Brian.
Well,
I totally repent. I take it all back.
How is not putting it under federal control going to change what you just said, Dan? I mean, is there a way that by not having it under federal control, you put in concrete every favorable thing to the Native Americans that they want? I don't think so.
Just exactly.
I love
like
it.
That.
Hey guys, not to get the energy level any higher here, but
we did say we needed to be more energy.
Well, I want to ask about the SB 54, the latest that you're hearing, you know, with these discussions about an election. Dan smiles
at
me.
Wasn't that a bill about parking this year?
Yeah,
that's all I know is the one about parking this year.
I think it's so interesting because we don't have a vacancy, but it is like the biggest political, you know, insiders discussion about what is Governor Herbert going to do for a special election when Representative Chaffetz decides to step down, which he's hinting he will do.
Well, and to see the tension that exists between the legislative and the executive branches. I've had some conversations with the speaker about this, and he wanted to present a unified front legislatively to the governor, and that really hasn't come together in the way that the speaker had hoped.
Okay, I'm going to break something on this show, something I rarely do.
Let's do it.
But I've been wanting to say it this whole time.
Can't wait to hear this.
I ran Senate Bill 259, which was a congressional replacement election, and the congressional replacement election was basically send it back to the parties. Here's the breaking element. That bill's news. That's not news, right?
That's history.
It didn't pass because it ran out of time. That being said, I met with the governor, I met with Senator Bramble, in their offices with the governor's staff, lieutenant governor included, and we all had a deal that we were supportive of Senate Bill 259 as it was amended and was going to roll through. Senate leadership did not prioritize it to the top of the list. As a result, it did not get voted on in a timely manner.
It passed the House?
It did pass the House.
Mm-hmm. In a weird form.
And the floor speech was, this is a good bill, vote for it. Because it was 11:59 when we took the vote.
Yeah.
In other words, there was no chance that that bill was going anywhere and that it was going to get ratified by the Senate. So at the end of the day, I just want everyone to know we had a deal to do it the way that Hughes said to do it, and now we are retrading ourselves on that deal.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the reasons that we don't have a deal on a special session now. As the governor says, you guys couldn't fix it during the regular session. What promise do we have that it's going to be fixed in a special session?
Because it's the only bill on the call.
I love it. You're listening to Brian King and Dan McKay. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Stay tuned, and we'll talk about, FBI Comey. Let's do it.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For podcasts of more local shows and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org.
Dan McKay on the right.
Brian King on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I want to take my colleagues back to Washington, D.C. and talk for a minute about James Comey. This is amazing what's happened this week.
Yeah, it really
is. It's amazing. I saw, you know, all the alerts come over my phone, and I'm like, what? President Trump has fired the FBI guy and done it under the, you know, the claim that he's doing it because of the way he handled Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, no, it's
when
phenomenal.
He's under investigation by this guy.
I personally
and the boss of this guy, you know, has essentially excused himself, recused himself from, you know, the investigation, and it's just.
I think this is Donald Trump's opportunity, the best he's had since being elected. To revisit his role on The Apprentice.
No kidding.
To sit there and say, you're fired. And he loves it. And I think and it's also, from my perspective, a diversionary tactic. I think that he recognizes this is going to get a lot of media, a lot of press, and it diverts attention from some of the other stuff that's going on, the investigations about Flynn, the investigations about the Russian connections that he's got, the improper. I mean,
the heat will go from 7, you know, to 10 very quickly. I mean, it won't. You know what I thought of immediately was what the University of Utah's just been through with a firing.
Yeah.
That there's unintended consequences that are going to come bite this president.
Yeah, I think that's
Dan?
True.
I wonder if if they have any
multi-million
dollar donations waiting in the wing in the FBI that's going to cause this. Sorry, I was just thinking how it's like to you.
Yeah.
You know. This is, as the news is developing, it's weird.
It's weird.
It is weird.
I'm getting used to,
weird.
And people need to get used to, the idea that Washington as the steady ship that just kind of, you know, moves along the ocean and you know, passes out candy or that kind of thing just as they go by, that's not D.C. anymore. This is, they are
for
in,
better or worse, it's
they are
not
in
D.C. anymore.
Full swamp clearing mode.
Oh, right. Spoken like a true Republican. Swamp clearing mode? Seriously?
Can you tell me? Okay, firing after firing. If you look around D.C. and you look around the certain uncertainty around Washington, D.C., I guarantee Comey, yeah, okay, fine. You can have your druthers. But if you look at one division after another and then you look at how slow they are to replace, you know, members of you know, important Senate ratified positions.
Oh, yeah.
They have more than 460-something pending. Senate, you know. So they are clearing house in a very slow, I wouldn't say it's methodical, but they're clearing house. Whether that, and again, this is whether it's good or bad, we will soon find out. But Comey, you cannot argue at the actions of the you cannot look at the actions of the FBI over the last year and say, you know what? They've done a great job.
Well, so what I would say is we went from bad to worse. Because maybe the last year's been bad, but this is awful. Well, I mean, because what's happened here is now you're going to have, you know, more independent-type commissions. And if we don't, it's not the United States of America.
Yeah, talk about government dysfunction. We were whining the last year or two about dysfunction at the federal level, most particularly in Congress. But this is dysfunction writ large. I mean, come on. I mean, I think it's crazy.
I also got to ask you guys,
tell me how
and I'm a woman on the panel. I got two guys here, but what's up with the Senate picking this working group of all, is it 13 men?
13
on
white
healthcare?
Males. White males.
Yeah, what is up with
it's
that?
It's stupid is what it is.
I just can't.
I have my head in the clouds.
Well, I'm just sitting here. I mean, I could, you know, I mean, I would be mad if they did it on banking, but on healthcare?
Well,
I mean, with pregnancy, breast cancer, birth control, I mean, women's issues.
And yesterday, Wednesday, our friend Senator Hatch said, well, this is going to be really tough to accomplish because once you give people health care, once you give them any government benefits, they're on the dole and they won't give it back. Oh, really? I mean, is that the perspective of how it is that we're on the dole when we provide assistance to each other to get through difficult times in our life? We're automatically on the dole. I can tell you who's on the dole. Been on the dole since I was in high school. His name is Senator Warren Hatch.
Hey, he didn't say
since
any
I was
derogatory,
in high school.
Unpopular epithets about whoever he was referring to. So I consider that a step in the right direction for Senator Hatch.
Fair enough.
Sorry.
Fair enough.
That's on the air, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Guys, I'm not going to pronounce it right, but we also had big international news with what happened in France this week where Marine Le Pen lost and this Macron, is that how we say it in French?
Or Marchand, Macron, I don't know.
I was really happy to see
coming
that.
To us for pronunciation may not help you.
Je ne comprends pas. Whatever.
Natalie, it might not help
but,
you.
But this was sort of, you know, we've been seeing all these things towards populism and nationalism. And France, in a way that defied what we'd seen in, you know, this country and in Great Britain, they stuck with the centrist guy.
Yeah, no, I thought it was really encouraging. Encouraging in the sense that you had a candidate who pretty clearly was trying to run in the model of Donald Trump and Brexit and sort of nationalistic, mm-hmm. anti-immigration, and really the French showed with a pretty resounding voice in favor of an unknown, relatively speaking,
a
political unknown.
I looked up this
unknown.
Guy. He's a young.
Yeah.
He's
progressive.
Progressive. He's a handsome. I mean, this is... That's interesting.
Never held political office, I don't think, has he? And yet it was a 2/3, 1/3 vote in France. I mean, it was a remarkable victory.
Mandate.
Yeah. So crazy.
So guys, wait, you're telling me that, well, anyways.
You want something else you want to bring up?
I was going to say, you know, the electorate fell for, you know, an attractive young guy with the populist message.
You're telling me there's a chance.
Like, so.
Hey, I want to give
that down for
a reminder
form.
To our listeners. We do a lot of talking on the show, but we'd love you to be part of the conversation. And look for a headline that catches your eye. If there's some policy procedure in public policy, public affairs that interests you that you'd like us to explain, post your questions or comments to our Facebook page. It's KCPW 88.3. You're also welcome to email us at comments@kcpw.org. We'll try to have a conversation about it.
Hey, yeah. Should we have our own Both Sides of the Aisle Facebook page?
Yeah.
Not a bad idea.
Let's give Emily that idea, our producer Emily Means.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Guys, but one of the things I want our audience to know is part of what makes Both Sides of the Aisle work is the chemistry that's felt among those of us that are on the program. And you guys, you know, come at it. I've heard you yelling at each other off the air, but have you guys seen each other much since the session?
You had
a little, like, conflict the last day of the legislative session,
conflict.
And you're, like, kissing and making up.
I felt guilty. I felt guilty about this, Dan, because just for the listening audience, and I'm grateful. It's a confession, but I feel very lucky that this did not happen into an open mic. But you know, there are rules of decorum on the House floor, and it was really frantic the last few minutes. I mean,
I breached them. In Brian's defense, I breached.
Well, so did I. But anyway, at about literally, it was less than 10 to midnight. Representative McKay was up making a presentation. I asked him if the speaker if the sponsor of the bill, Representative McKay, would yield to a question. He said no. I said, oh, really?
Which is within my purview to do.
It is within his purview.
It's just never done.
It's just never done. It's very rare that anybody seriously, we do it sometimes jokingly, but seriously says, I'm not going to answer your question. But he said, I'm not going to answer your question. And he had a good reason for not answering my question, which was, literally, we had 8 minutes to midnight, and we had a bunch of bills that we had to get to or wanted to get to. But I didn't take kindly to that, and I ranted and raved for a minute or two and then sat down.
They've made up on
both
sides.
And then I went over and pointed my finger at him and on the House floor said, you lied!
Yeah. He was unhappy, but you know what? It just speaks to, you know, Brian and I have been friends now for, what are we, 7 years now?
Yeah, something like that.
So that's when we first met and started working in the legislature. And, you know, during that time, there are certain things in that environment where you get hyped up with emotion or whatever it might be, and it is easy to lose track of where you're at and what you're doing. It's easy to do and fall into that, you know, frustration pit. But I will say this, it didn't affect my, you know, my love for Brian King, candidly. I knew he was frustrated at me. In fact, you know, like not 15 minutes later, I gave him an award for something, and I can't remember what it was because I give out joking awards after the thing. And so I gave him an award for something.
It was about my comment on the abortion bill dealing with zygotes.
Oh, yeah, you got
the zygote award.
Yeah, the zygote is not a fetus award.
Well, I can tell
like
that's the first time zygotes made it on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah. But to your point, Natalie, look, I have been punched one time on the House floor, not in the face or anything like that, but, you know, jokingly in a way that was harder and did make me angry at the time.
Interesting.
You know, I've since been told that I have a very punchable face, so it totally kind of fits with the whole deal.
Just on a little lighter note, And maybe it's happy and it's sad, but we got swept by the Golden State
that
Warriors,
terrible,
the Jazz. Did you guys make it to any games?
I love the Jazz. The way that they played the Clippers really was inspiring, quite honestly.
Absolutely.
They did an incredible job with the Clippers. But I think the Golden State Warriors, I just sort of looked at, and I watched the Warriors play, and I just thought, you know, these guys are playing on a different level.
Yeah, it was like watching college and pro or something.
Yeah, I mean, the Golden State Warriors are one tough team.
Do we know the coach's name, Natalie?
Yeah, Quinn Snyder.
Okay.
I can do Coach Quinn.
I just remember a couple months ago
we said,
blew that.
Don't bring sports up on both sides. I just wanted to mention this, though. Gordon Hayward, who during the last game had the chance as he was called out, you know, Gordon Hayward, whatever. You guys think he'll stay?
I hope so. I think so. You know, he said all along he has a great deal of respect and admiration for those players that commit themselves to their place, their location. And I hope he does that here. I think he'd like to pull a John Stockton. I hope he does anyway, because I have special affection in my heart for John Stockton because mm-hmm. he was so committed to be a Utah Jazz player.
Dan, you got thoughts on this? I know you're a golf guy, but you got to be a Jazz guy too.
Yeah,
everyone's Jazz.
I went to more games this year than I did in the past.
Honestly,
they're phenomenal. Uh-huh. I mean, it's phenomenal that at Utah Market, we get into a second round of the playoffs. And the idea that we're going to get to Karl Malone, John Stockton, without commitment from players like Gordon Hayward, that ain't happening.
Yeah. I was thinking just about the decision he has and, you know, not to get in. I don't even know the details, but, you know, there's a money issue. But I understand that the Jazz can offer the most money and keep him here if they want to. And I'm sure they will want to. But I was thinking about quality of life. And why do you want to move your family when you've got a team here that's got headed in the right direction with a great coach and the Miller family and some of the Jazz management that are so professional. I mean, I think sometimes they get so into playing in the big lights and they just forget that that doesn't make you happy.
Yeah, it's a bright light, big city thing, I think.
But there's some. If you offer the max NBA salary, I'll just put this little plug in because I had a bill file idea one time to help the Jazz. But if you made NBA players exempt from income tax, I know it sounds crazy.
Yes, it does.
It does sound crazy.
But another exemption.
The states.
You'd keep better players. You'd be more likely to keep the players here.
The states that have no income tax have no problem attracting talent.
Talk about pandering.
All I'm saying. I had that idea. Okay. I'm not saying I ran it.
Guys, before we go to gripes, but have your gripe ready. But any quick last comments? I hope we can put it to bed with this show. But about the whole University of Utah. Health Sciences, Huntsman Cancer Institute, and specifically the coverage of both these papers.
Yeah.
Salt Lake Tribune, Deseret News. Tribune's completely conflicted. Deseret News, this Daphne Chen writes article after article that was just really instructive and powerful, I thought. Quick reactions.
Well, I'll tell you what I think it shows is that these conflicts of interest do have real impact. You can say, well, I'm going to declare my conflict. I'm going to make it public. But at least in that journalistic setting, and I don't think the Tribune has done a horrible job of covering, but they have been impaired to some degree in how outspoken and how aggressive they've been, relatively non-aggressive compared to the Deseret News, I think. And that's in part because of we've got that situation with their conflict of interest. So I just think that's what it shows.
Damn.
Yeah. What I learned from it is don't make a billionaire really mad. That's, there's a lot of people you can make mad. Don't make those guys mad.
Well, Vivian Lee sure feels that way, and President Pershing sure feels that way.
Yeah, because I don't know, I'm not familiar with the fact pattern at all. I just saw what was kind of going on in the press. I don't know the personalities, really. I've met mm-hmm. Vivian Lee. That's really it, right? Mm-hmm. And I bet I've met Ms. Beckerle as well. In that process, Dr. Beckerle, I should say, in that process, I will say that the whole thing was handled poorly by everyone involved, and it should be done the exact opposite in the future.
Yeah.
And I think that people from the U acknowledge that and recognize it almost immediately.
If there's any young men dumb enough to listen to a political show, don't break up with anybody by text.
Yep.
Just like don't send an email to fire somebody.
Dan, I've got to go to gripes. I'm going to come to you. But as I do that, I want to mention to you that I was talking to somebody about this issue and somehow both sides of the aisle came up and the person said, "Isn't Dan McKay the guy that doesn't like the U?" Somehow they remembered when you ordered the audit.
Is that true?
I didn't order the audit.
fault.
That was the speaker.
Perpetuating the myth.
That was the speaker.
You commented on it and got yourself in
trouble. One of us in this room had a lot to do with ordering the audit, and one of us had nothing to do with it.
I sure wish that you
were quite. Which one would you argue has more to do with it? That's my gripe right now. You brought my gripe to me. I'm telling you my gripe. Only one of us had something to do with that audit. And his name rhymes
shall remain with
ring.
With
ring. Good gripe. We didn't plan that. Brian, what's your gripe?
My gripe is, why don't you Republicans start calling out Donald J. Trump for the huckster, the grifter, the charlatan that he is? Come on, Dan. He's destroying your party. I say this seriously. He's destroying your party. He's going to destroy the country if we're not careful. But I mark my words. He's going to take the Republican Party down.
He was voted for by Republicans. So if you can argue, Republicans in your point of view.
Yeah, no, it's dumb.
Democrats aren't doing that great here in this state either, so I'm not going to take lessons from you.
fair enough.
Oh, guys, you know, my gripe's not nearly as exciting as what you guys have shared, but I am griping about injuries in sports, and it's because my beloved Real Salt Lake has half of their players injured, and then I watched what the Jazz went through, and it's like, can't we get healthy players in this town? So we can show off our soccer magic.
The Real have had a tough season so far.
Oh, yeah, it's been rough.
Only Robot Wars will you see healthy players.
Yeah. Well, you've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, been joined by Representative Brian King and Representative Dan McKay. The program was produced today by Emily Means. Thank you, Emily. And to our audience, thanks for listening.